Welcome to episode 228 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Nick and Marty. How are we going, guys?
Going well, thanks, Jace. Going well. Up for the fight today.
Ooh,
yeah.
Up for the fight. I love when Marty's up for the fight.
I'm going to get straight into it because I reckon there's a bit to unpack here, and I didn't think it was going to be, you know, that much of a hot debate, but turns out now rethinking it will be, because I want to talk to you guys about an $80 billion problem for Australia. Do you know what it is?
There's a lot of them.
Definitely not negative gearing, because that's 165.
Yeah, that's double. That's double. But that's over 10 years. This is just the current balance of I'll tell you what it is. It affects our economy. I think it affects our future. And I think everyday Australians that are coming through the education system right now should be thinking about this. And that is help debt, which back in my day, or you guys, Marty, I don't know if it even existed in your day, but Nick, you and I might remember it as a hex debt.
Yeah.
And now it's called a help debt.
Yeah. Just trying to polish a turd, change it from hex to help.
Well, that's, you know, the government always loves a rebrand to make things more exciting and sound better. But Marty, did that? I am going to ask you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, hex debt was around.
You were the first generation to get it.
I think you got an award for going to uni, didn't you? Didn't you get an award back then?
I don't know. They used to frame a lot of stuff, but I think I'm the one that got framed with all that. But yeah, hex in Germany is witch. So so it's a witch debt. So that's all I'll say.
Well, that might be something to unpack. But effectively, you know, what I want to talk about here, and, you know, it does touch home a little bit when, you know, talk about, you know, I've had a help debt or a hex debt myself. And, Nick, you would have – do you remember the balance of what yours got up to by the time you finished?
I've actually got no idea, to be honest. I remember when I paid it out, and I wasn't that young. 30 grand rings a bell.
Which can still take, you know, at six or 7 years at, you know, your startup wage or, you know, your younger wages as you're kind of working through. And, you know, I've always had this kind of conversation as well. When Greg and I started out in the accounting industry, I think my first salary was like $40,000, and it wasn't even enough to make a help repayment or a hex repayment as a graduate accountant.
24K.
Oh, that's all your first salary. Jeez.
It's $400 a week.
Mate, I don't know if we're showing our age. Marty's probably going, boys, that's big salaries back when. Marty, what was the salary when you got your first job?
When I went into the bank, it was $24,000 in 92. So, yeah, that was the first job.
Oh, well, there you go.
Legitimate job. Lots of apple picking in between then.
Lots of hustles, side hustles.
A lot of little hustles. Few stand-up nights.
The help repayment thresholds and the percentages have changed every year for the last, you know, 10, 15 years that I've been working, you know, a full-time big boy job after university. But, you know, you get into uni, you pick your subject, it's free money, you know, essentially mindset-wise, because you're going to do this degree, and once you've got your degree, you'll earn a big salary because you're a university-qualified person, and you know, you'll pay it back. But it's not until you actually strip back the numbers and, you know, again, as young Aussies or people making a decision to go to uni and study courses. I had an example of a client who she actually did a primary school degree and then followed into a law degree because she decided not to be a primary school teacher anymore. And I think the balance ended up over $80,000 across multiple degrees. You know, and looking at the numbers, if I've run the numbers based on earning a low six-figure salary, so call it around $120,000 for the first few years of a career. If you're entering into the law career, that's probably not a bad space to be earning over the first couple of years. And you'd be looking at about 7.5% of your salary would go back to help repayments. So at 7.5%, you're losing $9,000 a year back to your help repayments. Now, $80,000, not including the fact that that's going to go up with CPI or indexing each year, it's going to take you 9 years of making help repayments to be able to pay back that debt. And that's 9 years that you don't have additional cash flow to purchase a property, or 9 years that you're servicing this debt, which does affect borrowing capacity. That's correct, guys?
It affects borrowing capacity and Marty's revenue. So it's a big issue.
I think it's deplorable. I just think... Like, just load young kids up with debt, you know, and then, you know, you yes, go into the career that you want to go into, but I just wonder Well, I guess the argument the other way is, I guess they wouldn't have the chance if they can't afford to go into it, then they might not have the chance to go and study. But far out, something doesn't sit right with that. To have someone 80 grand in debt and then be 5 years before you're even working, you know, with 4 or 5 years, it seems like very anti-intuitive to me.
Yeah, there's plenty of stories as well. I mean, I've got clients with 40 to 50,000 or, you know, all these different numbers. But you even think about women who just get started in their career and then they have children. They come out of the workforce or from earning enough money to tip into the threshold to make help repayments. And then all of a sudden, a few years later, when they get back into the workforce, the help debt's gone up with indexation every year. So they're kind of two steps forward, three steps backwards. So again, there's talks about whether that should be frozen, you know, or how to make the repayments, you know, somewhat actually make sense so that the debt comes down. And that is the reason I bring this up, is that this $80 billion problem is growing every year. It's not like what's happened is that, you know, everyone who goes through university or does these help loans or HECS loans, and there's other versions of them, student support loan, trade support loans, it all kind of conglomerates together. But you'd think if we were promoting or providing an economy where people finished university, got into successful jobs that paid them enough to make their repayments, we would actually have a reducing debt number because the repayments would be outweighing or at least be making a dent at it. But year on year, this debt has grown and gone up. And where it became, I guess, more in the spotlight was now that we're having increasing inflation, it's causing the number to go up even more when they apply indexation. Now, the government's decided to cap that. And probably another reason I kind of bring this up, you know, probably because I'm a little bit dirty because I've paid off my help debt in full. The government announced at the end of 2024 calendar year that they're just going to blanket make 20% of the balance of the help, the nation's help debt balance, that it's going to make 20% of it disappear at the end of this financial year. They're just going to wipe $16 billion, just write it off like it never existed. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on that, guys.
I think it's just a vote grab at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, I think it's just a bit of gameplay more so than anything else. And I'd be disillusioned if I'd spent all that time paying off the debt. It's probably the right thing to do at some level too. But I'm just sitting here annoyed.
Yeah, it's annoying, but here's my theory on it. That's the help debt is not the problem. The problem is the cost to educate. Someone's got to pay, right? And that's why we're having this argument, because someone's got to pay for people getting educated. But the bigger issue is, why does it cost that much to get educated? And, you know, I'm just thinking about my own university degree. My contact hours were 12 hours a week. So 12 hours a week is all I had to go into uni. The reality is I never went. I did it all online. And that was back in, you know, the early 2000s. So I would go in and I would get all the material, I would study. I would go in, I'd sit the exam. I knew I just had to pass the exam and I was away and I got my degree. I was barely at the university. Now, I went for a walk around. What's the uni near the Melbourne Hospital just in the city here? Is that Melbourne Uni?
Not sure.
Anyway, I went to VUT in Footscray, so I think we were at the hospital and trying to kill a couple of hours. So we went for a walk around the university, and I couldn't believe that building and what was going on in there. Unbelievable, like perfectly manicured gardens, like sports facilities, all this stuff. And when you look at this and you're thinking, well, people have got to pay for this, I actually wonder what the cost could be to deliver education if they had to pin it right back. And I know there'll be counter arguments to that for sure, but at the end of the day, if it's creating debt that people can't afford to pay and the government can't afford to pay as well, then there's a bigger problem. Now, Jace, I did accounting, banking and finance. I can also tell you that most of my learning was done on the job. So did I get value out of the university degree? Number one, I barely went to the university because it was only 12 contact hours a week. I never used the sports facilities at the university because I was playing footy and going to the gym around the corner. Like, they've all got pools and basketball courts and whatnot. And number three, you learn a bit of theory, but most of it you learn on the job. Now, that's my degree. Obviously, we there's other degrees we spoke about before, like, you know, doctors and stuff, where you've, you know, it's probably going to be a bit more intense. But working how to balance a ledger, I can easily do that online. I don't need to go to, you know, Melbourne Uni or VUT to do that. So I wonder how much they could save by delivering the education in a different way. And then second to that, how much could they then lean on existing organisations to provide that education? So, you know, as an employer, what I can say is we do not like taking people that are not experienced, because the downtime out of our business, it impacts our margins too much. If we don't have a profitable business, it impacts how people get paid. So we need to have a profitable business. The minute we take on someone inexperienced, it's an issue for us. So we don't take on graduates as a small business, unlike a, you know, top four accounting business would. However, if, and I know the government does this in some ways with apprenticeships, but, you know, if someone could maybe come into our business and we can get a capital injection from the government to train them, or maybe the final year of university is done inside of a business, hypothetically. I just think the core issue is the cost. It's not the debt. Someone's got to pay the debt, but why is the debt going up? Because the cost to deliver is going up. And how much value, particularly for certain topics, how much value is actually being delivered versus getting into the workforce and learning that way? That would be my argument, which would mean certain degrees cost more than others based on what you actually need to do. Do you need to go to uni, or can you do it all online? Catch up with someone once every few months to go through a few things. Balance that with work experience on the job training. Small businesses get an injection to spend the time for you to do that. But they've got to fix the core problem, which is the cost to deliver the education, and is it a relevant cost based on the outcome? I can definitely say for me, it wasn't a relevant cost for the outcome, because I don't think I learnt much at all at uni, and I think going a little bit more than I did wouldn't have made a huge difference, because you're young, you muck around. That's what you do. I learnt when I got into the workforce.
Couldn't agree more. Marty?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've annoyed many people because of my lack of education and what I've been able to do just in business. Because, you know, like you said, you hit the ground running, you're learning from the ground up, and you're applying what you're learning immediately. So even, you know, I got offered to go to uni and do journalism at RMIT, but I didn't take it up because I just thought there were better things I wanted to do, and I wanted to just get into the workforce. I didn't want to lose 4 years. Now, if I wanted to be a commentator on Channel 7, maybe, you know, maybe, right? But, yeah, and I guess it depends on you, yeah, what you want to do ultimately. But I look at now, even with Charlie's homeschooling, like we pay, I think, around about $275 a month, but it's self-directed learning with teachers and with people online. And if you're advanced, you can advance very quickly, you know, through it. Like, I know he's doing year 8 maths, and, you know, but it's based on the child. You know, it's not just this is the grade and this is the format. It's actually acknowledging the child. And I think moving forward, I would think that delivery method would become more and more popular as people have more flexibility in where their day is spent and what they're doing and what they want to do. There's nothing to say that, you know, you can't get that education at a lower cost, Nick. So I think there'll be a massive revolution in education over the next 5-10 years, and I'm experiencing it firsthand. And I think it'll continue to go down those lines, and it'll be much more cost effective, but it'll be at a price point that more people will be available to pay without having to access debt as well. So it's like a real-time expense, but it's probably, I would say, oh geez, it would have to be maybe 10 times cheaper than going to private school for the year. And yet, because it's so individualised, the advancement in the person and the interest in the learnings is there. So I go, I like those odds, right? Even logistically, I think financially that's a better premise, and then people can, you know, can afford that type of education. Maybe uni's the same, you know. It's like we say, people going into finance, you know, you get your Cert 4, you get your diploma. Yes, there's a cost to it. Maybe the government pays, like you said, their last year of uni, or coming out of high school, whatever the case may be, depending on where the person's driven to go, and there could be options. I think doctors and everything, that has to be thought, yeah, anything very specific and highly detailed has to be thought through very carefully. But again, I think it could be reimagined.
Well, I think as well, one thing I'm trying to channel my mind back all these years ago to when I chose to go to university. Now, I don't think, how do I rephrase this? Financial education for young people, what you learn at primary school and high school around finances, I think it's severely lacking. We don't learn the basics and the fundamentals, and it's up to your parents. And if your parents don't teach you, then you go into the big wide world, shit out of luck and not really aware. So while I don't think my parents did a bad job educating me on financial decisions, when I chose to go to university and signed up to Monash and did a Bachelor of Business majoring in accounting, banking and finance, took on the extra units, it was free money without anyone really explaining how, you know, I was 17, finishing high school at 18, making a decision to go to university. And when someone's like, yeah, you don't have to pay for that up front, don't worry about it, it's an interest-free loan and you just pay that back later when you get a job. It didn't feel like there was much more of an explanation about how it worked, how long it would take, how it would financially impact me down the track. Now, would it have stopped me going to university? Probably not. But my decision-making around money, the extra units, potentially I wouldn't have done the double major and I would have done the single major, and I might have been 10 grand ahead from a debt perspective on the help debt. So I think there's a lack of understanding about how it works, and then that's also why the debt isn't going backwards, because people just aren't in a position to be able to start to pay it down fast enough when you get to the other side of it. By the time indexation's applied and the debt goes up and up and up, by the time you finish uni and then work in your career long enough to start making repayments, it may have gone up by another $5,000 or $10,000 over multiple years based on indexation.
When you said that out loud, Jace, that made me almost feel disgusted, because again,
it's a lot of debt that you're letting young people commit to.
And what you've explained is they're not teaching people how to manage their money in school, because would you make that commitment, understanding the wider consequences of that? You could be putting it into a share portfolio. You could be learning online for a tenth of the cost. You could be taking alternate routes that you're not sort of given real access to unless you're really independently thinking on this. But at 17, hey, who's really independently thinking, right? It's like, You're just finding your feet in the world.
Yeah.
It's,
and how many 17-year-olds without a job can take on 40K of debt?
It's crazy. It's like, when you say it out loud, it's crazy.
Yeah. And that is the situation of how, if you look back at where majority of this $80 billion started, it's probably kids coming out of high school making decisions about their future without an understanding of what that debt actually means. I did want to touch on as well where, you know, Nick, what you said about how to make this affordable or how to bring the cost down, you know, the no frills version of the education. Like, I look at the salaries and the way those universities are structured in the physical sense. And, you know, I look to other places around the world. So like Finland, university education is free for EU students. Sweden and Norway, higher education is free or heavily subsidized. And you look at it and go, well, if the government's sitting on $80 billion of debt and they're never really going to get it back and they're going to start writing it off, essentially we're kind of going towards a higher education's borderline free here. But what if it was just more affordable and people actually paid their way?
What would it mean for the country, for the government to say we're investing in our people? You know what I mean? And creating innovation and, you know, we've talked about, you know, financial management, but just in general, like imagine the excitement around that and what people could potentially come up to. It changes the whole atmosphere about learning, you know. It's and it just feels so archaic the other way in comparison to that. When you hear Finland is investing in their people, I mean, you don't need to try and buy votes. You're going to get votes.
Create a smarter country, right, full of people that are educated and making good decisions about, you know, what they want to do with their lives and feeling empowered that education is available to be able to
strip and tax off everyone.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. So, look, I brought this one up as a bit of an interesting one, just to get, you know, the minds ticking as to how that looks and how it works. I think if anyone's listening to this and they do have kids that are coming through, you know, high school age, I think the conversation around how they're going to pay for their education and what a help debt looks like when they are on the other side of it. Just a interesting curveball for those that are in their career and want to do a master's. I've always found this one interesting. You can get what's called fee help. And hypothetically, let's say each year a master's is $10,000. If you're in the higher tax bracket, this is where we see this work out really well. And I just throw this in as an extra tax tip at the end. If you're in the 45% bracket and you decide you want to do a master's and you can get access to fee help, that, let's say each master's is $10,000, even though you've used fee help and got the government loan to pay for it, you can claim a $10,000 tax deduction for the cost of that unit or subject on your master's. And then, as an example, you get a $4,500 refund back on your tax return. Now, of course, those help repayments start coming out the other side to pay that loan back, but you've got the benefit of the tax deduction up front for paying for that course through that government loan. It's different to a help debt. It's a very specific type of fee help. But, you know, that's an example again. But I sat there the first time that came across my desk many years ago. I said, what the hell? You get a tax deduction, even though the government paid that 10 grand for you to do that master subject, and then they're going to give you $4,500 back.
You still pay for it though, right? Just over the years.
Yeah, you're still paying for it. It's coming back out. You pay on the other side as well. It's just, yeah, again, but like why? Why does it need to happen that way? Like,
yeah. Why do a master's to be a master of the topic? Do you earn more money if you do a master's? It's a legitimate question.
That is the required connection to say that, you know, the reason that's tax deductible is that you are more likely to have pay increases because of your master's in the line of work that you're doing. So that's generally, like anything that's a tax deduction in Australia, you need a nexus or a connection as to why you can claim a tax deduction. It has to either be required for your work or go towards you earning more assessable income in the future.
Wow.
Anyway, keep an eye out for the next couple of months. You know, as I said, a budget is coming up. It was already announced, this 20% reduction. So this $80 billion debt will magically turn into, you know, less than $60 billion or just around $60 billion. Bit over, sorry. It's end of the day, I need a coffee. Question? Yes.
So what are they taking away? Who are the lucky ones?
Anyone with a balance at the moment will just automatically have 20% wiped.
Oh, so if 20%, you get to, sorry, I missed that.
Yep, sorry, yeah. So the example that I've got there is you get to the end of this financial year and you're sitting on a $50,000 balance in your help debt. They will just wipe $10,000 straight off. You'll go to a $40,000 balance, give or take whatever CPI or indexation does. And what they're saying is that it's the little leg up that Aussies need to be able to start paying off and getting their help balances to where it needs to be. But I sit there and go, I haven't gone into the detail, but I wonder if I've got let's say one of my clients has a $10,000 balance and during the 2025 year they've paid $10,000 down, that $10,000 won't be kind of offset in the account until they lodge their 2025 tax return. So let's say in September 2025. So even though, again, it's just this thing the government does, I think it's going to happen this way, that even though they've got the 10 grand in their pocket, the balance is 10, it's going to drop to 8, and they're going to have to give 2 grand back to that person that was just about to pay off their help debt in full. They're going to give them 2 grand back, which is fine. They'll spend the money elsewhere and, you know, it'll come out in the wash. But again, it's these government decisions that, you know, we sit there and, you know, scratch our heads going, you know, vote grab, 100%. It's coming into election time. There's going to be some people out there that are going, sweet, 20% of my debt's now reduced. How good.
I know who needs the real help. Goodness.
100%. Well, just thought that was an interesting one for you guys. Don't have any major answers, but just wanted to watch out for these cheeky little government decisions. If you have listened and you do have a suggestion on how higher education in Australia can be done better, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au, or connect with Jace, Nick and Marty on LinkedIn, Instagram, or follow @thenumbersgamepodcast as well. We're always pretty active on all of our different socials.
Cheap education.
Give us a follow, give us a like. Cheap education, yeah, free education when you go back and listen to 228 episodes of the Numbers Game podcast. You'll come out the other side much smarter than when you started, I promise. An absolute master. But I appreciate you tuning in. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Invest in yourself, But don't drown in debt along the way. There's always a smarter way. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.